The model penal code says refusal to pay or absconding without payment or offer to pay gives rise to a presumption. And Michigan says simply absconding.
Absconding makes it too difficult. Just walking off the premises isn't absconding.
No. According to Kaplan.
Well, no, I didn't. No, it wouldn't be.
If he used the front door.
If he used the front door, fine. If he used the back door, yes.
I had
my Kaplan's right there. Sir.
But if you'd be using some other word, then maybe.
I had a client the other day that was 7 feet tall, weighed 300 pounds. He couldn't get through the men's
room. Yeah, you can't. Prosecute them for not paying the debt, even though they refuse to pay it. Unless they do something wrong other than just not paying.
Mm-hmm. Need something over. You just walk away from a taxi driver without paying. That's not responding.
Well, you can prosecute.
Yeah, you can prosecute. But you haven't got the prima facie case.
But you don't have the prima facie case. Mm-hmm. You can prosecute, but the judge isn't entitled to instruct the jury if you find, from the evidence of the case, that the defendant refused to pay, then... There's some evidence that he's guilty and has to be overcome.
Can't we substitute some word for absconding?
I think I'd request an instruction. If that word absconding wasn't in there, I'd request an instruction that the mere failure to pay is sufficient to get away.
Well, Kathleen, don't you think the use of the word absconding is better than the use of leaving without payment? Or?
Well, it may well be when what you're talking about is the confirmation case. What you're saying is, by golly, in the case in which he sneaks out the back door, and let him stay, he's got a pretty strong reason to believe he didn't have any intention of paying.
Mm-hmm.
And this makes you a confirmation case. If he walks out openly, the possibility that he forgot it, overlooked it, thought the man behind him paid it, any number of other inferences might be made. And if that's what you have in mind, then are we going to operate
this presumption kind of thing against him if evidence is before him, and he's going to pay. And if he's going out back there or something like that, he would add quite a bit of credence that there's more than just this is done, just a he didn't just forget it. It's not just an oversight.
And what you aren't talking about is evidence.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just
evidence that he didn't intend to pay. Thank you. There has to be some overt.
Well, there was a list of them in this in the present statute, isn't there? The list of these things, these overt acts that constitute a prima facie case. Why don't we use them? It's been successful, and don't know of any reason why we shouldn't use those measures, those head tests. Might add some words that we don't want to add that maybe it's nothing to do.
Well, yeah, there's no question that under this draft, a hotel owner would be a lot more limited in what would constitute a prima facie case than he would be under our existing law. In other words, under the existing law, you know, if he comes in, wasn't saying about the baggage, without baggage, or uses a false name or something.
He sneaks his baggage out.
It would be much easier now under this statute, under the defrauding an innkeeper statute, to make out a prima facie case than it would under this draft. There's no question about that.
You know, it's kind of a two-edged sword under the hotel ordinance in the city of Portland. There's some presumption if you don't of criminality on your part if you don't have baggage. And under this, if you surreptitiously remove it, there's going to be some presumption. You with me?
Is there in the city ordinance? You don't have by now?
I'm just.
The way they practice, if you go into a hotel, you don't know you haven't got any baggage, they make you pay in advance.
I think we have a very real political problem if we don't provide the hotel owner with some criteria here. Let's do it this way, Don. Let's employ the use of the word immediately as was suggested, moved, and adopted. Let's endeavor to keep this limited to these hotels, restaurants, taxi cabs. But let's try to work on language in the second draft that's going to maybe employ some of the criteria that's in the second draft statute.
In other words, you want to retain
these additional tests,
all these other...
Well, not necessarily all these. Let's use some.
What does the word ordinarily mean? Does the customer ordinarily pay, or is it the type of service that is ordinarily paid for by everybody?
Well, I think it's the latter.
I do too, but it doesn't say it that way.
In other words, I don't think that you can have any criminal statute where it's going to be completely a subjective test. I mean, if you've got that, you're not going to convict anybody of anything. If it's strictly going to be a subjective, the man can say, "Well, gosh, I never pay for my
That's the question.
I come back a week later. I always do that."
That's a question it raises in written so that the defendant could claim that's what it says. Depends on whether I easily pay. How about if you say, with reference to services of the type which is ordinarily paid for upon receiving the same, as in the case of hotel residents and the like.
Well, compensation for services is of the type. How'd you say that?
No. The services of the type ordinarily paid for upon receiving the same, as in the case of hotels, residents, and the like. We'll have to start out with reference to services which are ordinarily paid for upon receiving the same, as in the case of hotels, residents, and the like, and spending without payment or offer to pay, it's prima facie evidence. In other words, that's all we're talking about in three. That type of services.
Where services are of the type ordinarily paid for upon the receiving of them. Leave it up to the staff to use the suggestions that we've made to try to find an acceptable alternative and move on.
Back to the old drawing board.
I feel sorry for Mildred. She's taking down everything that we say verbatim, and we're changing it nearly every.
But we do want to include. Reasonable. Is there anything in this present statute that is unreasonable?
Well, I was going to ask, when we put the word food before lodging or other accommodations supplied any place, are we including the guy that doesn't pay the grocery bill?
Funny, the guy that's supposed to Safeway counter. doesn't offer any money and walks out with groceries.
Well, I don't think we are, because...
Because those are, that's property, for one thing.
Well,
that's right.
But in the present statute, it says anyone with intent to fraud obtains food, lodging, or other accommodations at any hotel, apartment house, inn, etc. And here we say, supply of food, lodging, or other accommodations in hotels, restaurants, or else. Well, elsewhere,
here,
would, it's a little bit broad, isn't it? See, the present statute...
We're defining service to include obtaining property. When we use the word food.
Well, in the context of or elsewhere.
Well, we say the supplying of food. In other words, the service is the supplying of the food, not the food itself.
I guess that's right. Yeah, that's right.
Well, but to meet the point, if we didn't use or elsewhere, and we used hotels, restaurants...
Then we leave out the picnics.
Well, I mean, delineate them like they are delineated in the present state.
Mm-hmm.
Hotel, apartment house, inn, boarding house, tourist campground, restaurant.
Motels.
Hotels. Cut it off there. Now, isn't that about as inclusive as this
photo physics? A catering service, would that be included in this?
Well,
I don't know why we need to protect the catering.
But if we do that, then we eliminate stables and kennels from the scope of this that we intended to include as far as lodging is concerned, right?
Well, I wasn't thinking of kennels in the context of hotels or elsewhere.
Hotels for dogs.
Well, it's a service. And we have a special statute now on the stables.
The guy's got a lead on the dog. He can keep the dog and then you pay your kennel bill.
Well, let's back to the drawing board on that.
It's either there or it isn't.
Now that we've come up with all the answers on sections...
But I want to make this point. I don't think that you would have a problem if a man goes into a grocery store and sneaks off without paying for his groceries. That's that plain and simple. He walks out with his groceries. That's property.
Yeah, that's that.
Yeah.
But with the word elsewhere in there, for instance, if you went to the hospital, if you've been dying and you didn't have to go to pay your hospital bill and you left,
and that really happens when the doctor says, no, I don't want you to leave. And the dog says, no, I'm walking out of here. They can't imprison him in the hospital.
Steal one of your old souls.
They generally die after they hit the bill anyway.
But that word elsewhere is pretty darn broad.
Let's limit it to the language in the present statute. We'll do away with elsewhere.
Okay, you want them enumerated then.
Mm-hmm.
Keepers and railroad people and so on, taxi cab drivers, cleaning. that the New York statute, particularly with reference to their sections 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 5, and 6, even though they are limited to pretty much specific types of things, would be a more satisfactory general statute than trying to generalize something as vague as this is. I didn't mean to raise that particularly for your consideration at this moment, but rather for future.
Yeah, I think that may be a
consideration.
Approach we're going to have to take.
Well, let's look at that for just a minute then. Like section 2 of the New York statute, with intent, a person is guilty of theft of services when, with intent to avoid payment for restaurant services rendered or for services rendered to him as a franchise guest at a hotel, motel, inn, tourist cabin, rooming house, or comparable establishment, he avoids or attempts to avoid such payment by unjustifiable failure or refusal to pay, by stealth, or by any misrepresentation of fact which he knows to be false. A person who fails or refuses to pay for such services is presumed to have intended to avoid payment therefore. Or a person is guilty of theft of services when with intent to obtain railroad, subway, bus, air, taxi, or other public transportation service without payment of the lawful charge therefor, or to avoid payment of the lawful charge for such transportation service which has been rendered to him. He obtains or attempts to obtain such service or avoids or attempts to avoid payment therefor by force, intimidation, stealth, deception, or mechanical tampering, or by unjustifiable failure or refusal to pay. There's no presumption as to that, is there?
Yeah. The presumption comes.
Presumption attaches to the
two.
The
transient situation.
Or a person is guilty of theft of services when with intent to avoid payment by himself or another person of the lawful charge for any telecommunications service. That's what you were getting at.
Good
and
word.
That's a good word. He obtains or attempts to obtain such service or avoids or attempts to avoid payment therefore by himself or another person by means of tampering or making connection with the equipment of the supplier, whether by mechanic, no perception there either.
I don't think it's. I don't think. It covers everything we talked about, except maybe.
It covers it in more detail.
Yeah.
It covers tampering too in 5, but we're going to get into tampering in another section.
It's got its own presumption there in 5. You can tamper with it if you intend to avoid payment.
And I frankly think that tampering would better be attacked through a separate section, such we're going to get to next.
I'll deal with credit cards, too, right off the bat.
Well, I purposely get into credit cards.
Yeah,
we're going to get into that later.
Yeah.
This is considered theft of services.
Let me suggest this. We'll probably meet, our subcommittee will certainly meet within the next month. I think that the first order of business on our adjournment today is for Don to try to coalesce our thoughts together into a couple of drafts and distribute them loose leaf to us.
Good.
Solicit our comments. We'll send them back. He'll try to evaluate those comments and come up with a draft or maybe alternative drafts at the next meeting. Okay.
I like this in here at all. Is there anything else? No. The only thing I don't see in there is what we were talking about in the way of supplying equipment for use. I wonder if that's covered.
It's the seventh
subsection. Is that? No. That covers labor.
Well, industrial equipment or facilities is another. Can you do that, Don? Can you pattern that?
Sure.
Can you pattern one draft possibly on the line of thought that has been most prevalent through our discussion as far as amending the your draft number one? Maybe draft an alternative section patterned after New York. We'll send it back to you with our thoughts and comments. Now let's go on, I think, in the interest of time, to criminal tampering on page 7. And maybe now would be a good time to take about 5 minutes, I think. I think so. So, you might look at Connecticut, as I'm sure you have.
Yes.
Let's go to tampering.
Okay.
That's what we've been doing.
Okay.
All right. That's what we've been doing with this last statute.
Criminal tampering. Yes, it's rather criminal, too. A person commits criminal tampering if, having no right to do so or any reasonable ground to believe that he has such a right, he tampers with property of another with intent to cause substantial inconvenience to the owner or to another person, or tampers or makes connection with property of a utility. Then, as used in this section, tamper means improper interference with something, meddling with it, or making unwarranted alterations in its existing condition. Utility means a publicly or privately owned or operated enterprise which provides gas, electricity, steam, water, or communication services, or any common carrier.
Is this going to replace that tampering with an automobile?
Well, no, that tampering with an automobile, if you'll recall, would be covered under our unauthorized use of a vehicle.
Then are we just...
But now this section is designed to complement the theft of services section, covering the type of conduct that is not theftless but amounts to unlawful interference with the property of another. Subsection 1 states the elements of crime. Subsection 2 sets out necessary definitions. Derivation, Michigan Revised Criminal Code, sections 2710 and 2712 is the source of the section. Also similar to New York Revised Penal Law, section 145.15. Both Michigan and New York provide for 2 degrees of the offense, with the more serious charge of criminal tampering in the first degree being reserved for one who with intent to cause a substantial interruption or impairment of a service rendered to the public by a utility or by an institution providing health or safety protection, damages or tampers with the property of the same, and causes interruption of such services. Now, I didn't get into that type of degree or that degree of crime. What it's aimed at is someone who interferes with the operation, say, of a facilities of a hospital or any utility service that would interfere with a large segment of society. This,
you know, like telephone line?
Well, in other words, it's just a question of how serious you look at these things. Now, that conduct would be covered under this draft, but it would not be singled out as being more serious than the other.
Yeah, because you could tamper with your own telephone. It wouldn't hurt to have a lot of people. Wouldn't be very serious, but technically it could come under there first degree.
Yeah.
In and you've got the court would have to take the, should have to take the circumstances into consideration in passing the sentence.
Now, enough people did it pretty seriously.
Yeah.
To the service.
Yeah, and that's what I say. It depends on the circumstances which the court can do.
Yeah. All right. Now, as noted in the commentary to the preceding section, there are Oregon statutes that prohibit interference with certain types of property, such as public utilities and motor vehicles. Malicious destruction of personal property is indicted in misdemeanor under ORS 164-900. But unless the conduct results in physical damage or destruction, probably would not be covered by that statute. Other statutes pertaining to willful injury or destruction of property, I've set them out here. But they, all of those other statutes, require some physical damage before they apply. Now, the criminal tampering draft would not.
We're going to get to a malicious destruction draft eventually, aren't we?
Yeah, that would be a separate crime against property. Now, what we're talking about here is a kind of conduct that may not result in the person stealing any service, or it may not result in any damage to them, to the utility or to the property that's been tampered with, but that it is still interfering with this property. Now, in other words, the statutes now that I set out in the previous section about interference with we have 164.610, interference with water rights and appliances, interference with gas and electric appliances, interference with telegraph equipment and service. Now, those statutes are broad enough to get at either the use of the commodity or the hooking up or interfering with the appliance or utility. Now, the theft of service would take care of the person who obtains something. He hooks up to the water main in his city and bypasses the meter and draws off water without paying for it. So our theft of services would cover that, but it would not cover just the hooking up or the tampering or interfering with the meters or interfering with the equipment the telephone company or something like that. He might interfere with this property and hook up to it, meddle with it, but actually not obtain anything as a result. And so the tampering is designed to cover this type of conduct where...
Just monkeying with it.
Right.
Turn it back to gas meter, so when the guy comes to read it, it reads as though you haven't used that. Now that's really theft of the service.
Yeah.
Or
because you have obtained something there, yeah.
But I can't think of any instances here where this would supply a substantial need.
You mean the draft?
Well, yeah. Tampering with property of another without hurting it, accepting to make a substantial inconvenience to the owner of it.
Well, what I was attempting to do was to not leave out of the protection that exists in the present statutes this interference aspect of our existing statutes. Interfering is a crime under these statutes without actually obtaining anything, the way I read it. And if we adopt a draft that just deals with theft, then we're eliminating something from the law and that's there now that I think is probably good public policy reason for
your coin.
There you have that. That comes under comprehensive theft. That would come under our theft.
Not necessarily. They go in there. They go in the telephone booth and they rip out the telephone booth and they yank the receiver off and leave it.
That's malicious destruction.
Is it malicious or is it tampering?
Well,
maybe I didn't. Maybe I'm a little too strong, but I can think of things that
are
not quite malicious.
I think we have, as you all know, this malicious destruction of personal property statute, which is 164.900, which reads, any person who maliciously or wantonly in any manner or by any means not otherwise particularly specified destroys or injures any personal property of another shall be punished upon conviction 3 years in the pen or in the county jail. It's an indictable misdemeanor. I prosecuted people for ripping telephones off the wall, and I remember one an arrest under this particular statute. And then we have a whole raft of other sections in 164, defacing posted notices, injuring mining claims, destroying monuments or markers, injuries to property by explosive, destroying surveyors' markers. I'm wondering, Don, if we couldn't possibly draft a comprehensive malicious destruction statute, maybe in two sections, one section of which would, call it what you will, malicious destruction or tampering or whatever, maybe divide it into degrees, but cover what you're endeavoring to cover by this separate section in that. Person here, I can't see any of these sections which you quoted, 810, 830, 840, 850, 860, 871. Every one of those existing statutes involves the injury or destruction of something, and the way we have this preliminary draft phrased here, you're talking in terms of inconvenience rather than injury or damage.
That's precisely why I made the statement I did in my commentary you misunderstood what I was trying to point out here. I wasn't trying to say that this was as a substitute for those.
What are give us some for instances on tampering that come to mind?
Well, I think the most common example would involve a public utility type.
That's B, but what about A?
Telephone would either be theft of service, injury to the property, or telephone isn't covered by A.
No, but it would be covered by
B.
Yeah, it would be covered by the definition of utility.
Is just defacing it? Are you talking about defacing it, or are you talking about
I'm talking about meddling with somebody else's property that without an intent necessarily to steal it.
But to play a trick on it. Inconvenience.
Common mischief.
It would seem to me that you could have a situation that where it might not be a motor vehicle, because I think that situation would be covered under our use of a vehicle. Yeah. But you can have property to think of a specific example.
When we refer to tampering with, refer to the New York statute as far as tampering insofar as the utility is concerned, they say tampers or makes connection with the property of gas, electric, steam, water works corporation. So there we're harping back to what we were talking about in theft of services, where we were making an unauthorized connection or something.
Well, this is...
Yeah, I think everybody goes and changes the time on your clock to inconvenience you.
Oh, I know where you're going. You have an instance where you can't prove theft, supposing there hasn't been enough time elapsed so that there's a theft. But you've seen that they've just tampered with the meter, and maybe it's 10 minutes ago. But there hasn't been time enough to really constitute a theft, right? So you need this statute to cover the...
The
gray area, yeah. This is a gray area statute. So,
well, what if, aren't we going to, in our general provisions, have a...
attempt?
Have a general attempt section?
I would think so. Yeah, always have
that. That would cover it. Then, of course, I can think of things like, right, you turn your water on and you want to water your lawn, and the neighbor's kid comes over and always turns it off. And so you can't get your lawn watered. I think there are places where it might apply.
Well, for example, 166.640 is an existing statute we have that's called tampering with railroad property.
The switches. There. The switches in the yard, for instance.
What about trespass? What about that, Don, it occurs to me, is the type of special interest statute that we want to get rid of.
But let's be practical.
Wouldn't it be covered by a general trespass statute?
Well, maybe not. Let's take the... you can pretty well enforce the railroad trespass statutes in the yard, but you can't keep the public from crossing.
Yeah.
And let's say that there is you have a public right of way crossing a railroad station, a railroad track, and a switching device, maybe 5 feet from the public roadway. So it is really well defined. So kids come along and they tamper with the switching device and throw the railroad train off the tracks. This is what I think they're talking about when they talk about tampering. This is one of them.
Yeah, the tampering of railroad property, yeah.
It's better to have, if you're going to have a statute about tampering, it's better to have it apply to everybody instead of picking out the railroad.
Well, right, but then that's
El Paso has its gas lines through here. They have their little shacks.
Switching stations, yeah.
Goes in there and turns off the gas.
Yeah, or turns one type of gas into another main or something like that, and they ruin millions of dollars worth of gas just by that one act. Now, the public is very much involved in this railroad thing because you still have passenger service to some degree. And
where?
It's claimed that there's passenger service, and so it's public safety involved here too.
When you get through and you have a statute on vandalism,
do we presently have a vandalism statute?
No, by the time you finish revising this code, maybe vandalism is in the destruction of property type of thing. But it just seems to me like this has the same kind of indefiniteness to it that you have in the loitering statutes, the vagrancy statutes, that you discovered here in trying to figure out what the devil you mean by substantial inconvenience to the owner.
Or meddling. What does meddling mean? That's why I think if we could lump this into a malicious destruction statute in a couple of different parts or degrees, and make the tampering part of it, or vandalism part of it.
They call it criminal mischief, but under the model penal code. But their criminal mischief deals with, my recollection is it
I think there's a need for this. I didn't when I first read it.
Well, although I'm still hard-pressed to give you an example that would fall under A, it seemed to me that if we just limit it to utilities, we might be leaving out an area of protection there, the property interest that would not necessarily fall under the definition of utility.
Well, here's a good example. When we were kids, or when I was a kid, I knew of some kids that put railroad ties across the tracks. So that Kinzu goose would go off the tracks. Ponda and Kinzu and such. This is the type of thing.
But it didn't actually happen. They discovered the ties and removed them, and no destructive property.
Every once in a while, we have kids tampering with the crossing arms on the railroad crossings.
Yeah, or somebody covering up a traffic sign or something like that.
Yeah.
Or taking a nut out of a bicycle so that the brake doesn't work.
There's a specific chapter for this kind of bicycle, for the traffic signs in the motor vehicle code.
At 166.640, and that's one that I set out there, I referred to tampering with railroad property. It deals with placing an obstruction on your railroad track, roadbed, and streetcar track. Nuisance tears up, removes, or misplaces any rail switch, prop, whatever that is, guardrail, counterguard, any part of the railroad track, roadbed, streetcar track, railroad block signal, crossing bell, and crossing.
Here's one now. You mentioned cattle guard. This would apply pretty well in eastern Oregon. If you leave farmers, your neighbor's gate open, and all the cattle get out, down the road, get hit, and all that sort of thing. Or maybe it doesn't. Maybe there is no actual damage, but it certainly causes a substantial inconvenience by such an act.
Give you an example. On Lark Mountain, they have snow gates in the wintertime. A couple of years ago, some kids went up there, shot the locks off the gate, opened up the snow gate, and some other kids connected with them went on up through the snow gate, and they got snowbound, and one of them died.
Yeah.
There was an effort to prosecute them under the misdemeanor felony rule or whatever. But there, those kids that shot the locks off that snow gate, or maybe they didn't even shoot them off, but just lifted it up, they shouldn't have gotten off scot-free for doing that, because there was a reason for that snow gate to be down. This is the kind of thing, huh, Don?
Yeah, I think there's a place for it.
Yeah, even in the private sector, I think there is.
But I'm concerned about the broadness of the language. I can see the court looking at it in light that it looks at the vagrancy statute. Tamper means improper interference with something. Meddling with it or making unwarranted alterations in its existing condition. Boy, that's pretty broad.
That's what we're talking about, though, in the other statutes that this is to replace. It's exactly that. What else is it?
It's
an unwarranted alteration.
Yeah, this is it. This is
the word unwarranted be better than improper? Or maybe both of them.
Tamper means improper interference, unwarranted interference with something.
Now, the commentary to the New York draft is really too helpful, but it says tamper implies the idea of meddling or interfering with or displacing property.
What's the commentary on the Michigan draft, or is it one, Don? This, he lifted this from Michigan.
Yeah, which in turn had lifted it from New York. They say the draft condenses the substance of several sections of, and the sections they quote from their statutes, many of them are similar to what we have in ORS right now. Interference with utilities molesting lines or the telephone company or the telephone corporate telegraph radio corporation. Obstructing streams or waters improved by water power or water supply company. Connection to injury of damage to facilities of water system electric or gas company. Now, those are some of the statutes that they repealed by their draft. Their section 2712 defines the crime as either tampering with another person's property, intent to cause substantial inconvenience to someone, or tampering or making connection with property or utilities. Tampering must be intentionally done. The only basis for criminality based on the form of negligence is an unreasonable belief that he has a right to do the act that she's about to do. To tamper means to interfere with under circumstances in which the equipment is not damaged, pulling a power switch, for example.
Well, why not? Section 2712, Michigan. It doesn't define tampering, though, does it?
Okay.
Where does it, where's tampering defined for him?
Over here, and there's 2710.
Yeah.
Yeah, 2710. Now, their definition of utility, I changed somewhat. They said it may be either public or privately owned, and I stated it as a publicly or privately owned or operated enterprise. But the substance is the same as theirs. And
the only question that I have in my mind now that we chew it around is 2A is a language of 2A. Well, I just wonder if we couldn't polish that up. What's change, improper?
Changing improper to something to meet the same as substantial.
Well, I don't know.
I don't think that's a word, but I mean in actual interference.
Tamper means improper interference with something, meddling with it, or making unwarranted alterations in its existing condition. Kathleen, you've been noticeably silent. You're always a pretty good contributor. What do you think?
Except you wouldn't enjoy the contract. I've had trouble all the way along with that. Tamper interference with something. That something is with me. But I haven't come up with it for the...
Well, could it be property? That's what you're talking about, isn't it?
Tamper means
a
property.
Be a dead body.
Nope. The dead body is property of somebody.
Yeah.
No, I think your card said it is.
Did we?
I had occasion just recently to look at it, and I was kind of surprised that it wasn't.
Is that right?
Well, it's not.
I had
subject is. I think you said not the subject of property rights or something like that. And that pretty burns.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm just thinking about that. Was that a damage, a property damage action?
Was a wrongful moving of the deceased husband's body without a consent.
Now,
164.610, interference with water rights, uses the word tampers and doesn't define it at all. Any person who maliciously, wantonly, or willfully cuts, breaks down, injures, destroys, extends, alters, tampers, or interferes with, or removes any ditch, canal, flume, pipe, or etc., etc. It's an interference with the water rights.
Well, if you said tamper means improper, interferes with the property of another, or making, tamper means unwarranted interference with the property of another, or making unwarranted alterations in its existing condition.
Where are you reading that?
I'm picking that out of the sky, but it's 2A. Tamper means unwarranted interference with the property of another, or making unwarranted alterations in its existing condition.
It seems to me like that your 1A is both the crime and the definition. You see, when you use the word unwarranted, for instance, in alteration, unwarranted by whose standards? The owner of the property? Maybe if I go out and repair your fence, if we have a neighbor line fence, it may be thoroughly warranted from my point of view, but to you, you don't want it.
Then it becomes a question of fact as to whether you have a reasonable grounds to believe that you have the right to do so, right?
How about the use of? How about unauthorized?
If it's a common fence, you'd have reasonable grounds, but if it's a cross fence on my own property, you wouldn't. That may be unauthorized.
Such an argument had quite a lot.
Well, if you were an absentee owner, and for instance, and you had a water line that was leaking and running across my property, or some other way that was interfering with my property, and you're not there, you can't do anything about it, and yet for your purposes, you may want the water to seep along. I should have some right to go over and fix it, I would think, either my property line or someplace, I don't know.
Well, that wouldn't be solved by using unauthorized.
No. How about improper or unauthorized?
Yeah.
You need to say anything. You say tamper means interference. Probably another.
Well, the point is that under certain circumstances, you might have a right to interfere with the property of another, in Ted Sloan's example, to protect your own property.
You have to have you have to have an adjective there. On after and another.
Well, isn't actually, you say a person commits criminal tampering if, having no right to do so or any reasonable ground to believe that he has such a right.
Yeah.
And with intent to cause substantial, he tampers with the property or interferes with the property, whatever you want to use. With intent to cause substantial inconvenience to the owner, is that what tampering is?
Right, mm-hmm. But then.
The dictionary definition of tamper all carry a negative connotation. Interfering.
Are you suggesting, Justice Sloan, that it's unnecessary to include a section defining tamper?
Well, it just seems to me like it. I don't, I'm sure it's not on the draft. And I'm just wondering if that isn't why these other, like New York and Michigan, I take it.
Michigan
does have it.
Michigan
does define it.
That's where this definition is.
Right.
Right.
You
didn't
say
improper.
New York doesn't
define
it.
Number one, you just say it means interference, meddling, unwarranted alterations. You read that, and not let it's much time about it, can't you? 1 and 1A.
It seems to me like you don't need that definition.
A person commits criminal tampering, yes, comma, having no right to do so, or any reasonable ground to believe that he has such a right, he tampers with the property of another.
With intent to cause an inconvenience.
Yeah, that's the first.
So then all you need to do is tampering is interference. And then when you refer back to the other, you know, you have plenty of tests and everything. So whether it was.
Well, it really says that the person commits tampering by tampering, but it's all right if he has a reasonable ground to believe that he had a right to do it.
Now I got one thought. I'm just pushing it. If we adopt this, you see, this, a person commits criminal tampering if having no right to do so or any reasonable ground to believe that he has such a right, he tampers with property of another with intent to cause substantial inconvenience to the owner or other person. We have three separate references there to intent. Criminal tampering, and then the negative, having no right to do so, or reasonable ground to believe that he has such a right. Criminal intent again, more or less. And then he tampers property of another with intent to cause. You don't agree? Well, I am. I just wonder if that just isn't unsatisfactory. Not that it doesn't say essentially what we want to express, but in rather undesirable terms. Go ahead. What were you going to say?
Well, you mean we're requiring too many different kinds of intent in this?
Not that it shouldn't be required, but I think only in the one instance. Intent certainly should be a part of it, and also you shouldn't have any right to do it. But I just don't like the way it's worded.
Would it be any better if you said a person commits criminal tampering if he tampers with the property of another with intent to cause substantial inconvenience to the owner or another person and without reasonable ground to believe that he has a right to do so?
Maybe.
Yeah. Gathers it together a little more.
Making connection with the property of utility.
It would be already covered, I think, but it is
under one. Yeah. Well, yeah.
Even you'd say even if it's a utility.
Yeah, I think we need to have a word utility in there somewhere.
That is by the railroads.
Yeah, really, that was the main purpose of this section in the first place was to pick up these sections that are in the code now, which primarily involved with either utilities or railroads.
Well, how about this? A person commits criminal tampering if he interferes with the property of another with intent to cause substantial inconvenience to the owner thereof or to another person, and if he has no right to do so or any reasonable ground to believe he has such a right.
That's the same as I said, except when you change the word tamper to interferes, and I wonder if that's broad enough, or maybe too broad. interfere with something, maybe without...
Well, we could use the language that appears now in ORS 164.610. They use tampers or interferes with.
Mm-hmm. There's a little bit different meaning of an interfere than the tamper.
Yeah. And this would encompass both of them. You say tampers or interferes with property.
We can just leave utility out of it altogether. No need to define tamper or utility.
I don't think I'm going to take utility out there.
On account of utilities wouldn't like to have it out?
No, not necessarily that. But
it's redundant, isn't it, Tom? As we defined it, according to the suggestion, it covers a waterfront.
Maybe it's a practical redundancy, though.
Well, but then do we get into construction problem with the with the core under some of their I do know without any doubt, and I saw this in the last session when we were endeavoring to pass the wire, copper wire bill, and the lobbyists for the SP and the UP and the gas company and telephone companies descended. You endeavor to make any change whatsoever affecting their jurisdiction, and immediately they go into shock, and there's going to be an awful lot about this new code on which they're going to have to be educated. But I can't see that if they are educated, they'd oppose something like this just because their name, just because it doesn't have their handle on it.
But I don't think we're being consistent when we say that, well, the theft of services section is too broad and not specific enough. And then we come over to criminal tampering, which is supposed to augment the section on theft of services, and say, let's make it broader and less specific. I think this, we're taking an inconsistent approach here, because the way I interpret the suggested amendment, it would make this more general and less specific in the application.
How would it?
Well, it would, for one thing, we would just generally be talking about property, period.
And that's what we're talking about in A as it now stands, isn't it?
Right. By using B in referring to utility, you're not intending to limit the application of A.
No, but I'm specifying that this covers property of a utility.
Well,
in A, you specify that it covers property of another.
Everything. Which includes property of utility. I think we've got an apple and an orange here. On the theft of services, we do want to restrict this to things like taxi cabs, restaurants, hotels, tourist parks.
The people who are dealing with transit.
Right. But here, if it's a snow gate on Mount Hood or a railroad crossing in Salem, or a gas meter or a whatever, they should come within the prohibition.
Is a workman of a utility, is the utility another? Is the utility another person?
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. So, oh, yeah. So if the workman was sabotaged, he would be covered under A. And
what? A workman would be covered under A?
Yeah. If a workman for a utility.
Without any right to do so, can't work with the utility.
Yeah, he'd still be covered. Well, then, I don't see what we need.
Well,
and the state is another, too. State of Oregon is another.
Yeah, the critical language, I think, is okay. without a right to do so.
Yeah. It just takes that utility statute and makes it apply to everybody's property.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think that's...
That's right.
I don't see... Well, you have reservations.
I do.
What are your reservations?
I was going to slip a motion by it, but I guess I can't do it.
Why isn't utilities covered in the property of another?
Oh, I think it would be covered. I'm not saying it wouldn't be covered.
But you think it's good to just use the words to
allay fears.
Get around the...
I don't think it hurts to have something in these statutes that maybe gives an inkling of what the legislative intent was here.
We can copy that in the commentary.
Which won't be... Yeah, the commentary would be there, but the commentary may not always be there.
Let's do it this way. If the Union Pacific Foundation will grant us $100,000 to increase our staff, we'll put it in. And if they won't, we'll leave it out.
The last
minute. There's a lot of statutes that say property in the government or the state of Oregon or other person or corporation. And you don't need all that stuff. But somebody put it in.
For purposes of this draft, could I suggest in the amendment that was, could we say that Mr. Spaulding puts his suggested amendment in the form of a motion? The only question I have is whether we want to use tampers or interferes or just leave it the way it is.
I think there's some benefit to add the word or interferes.
Okay. Do you agree?
I agree.
Mr. Okay. Chairman, could we get back to your suggestion about combining this with a section on malicious mischief? Perhaps I could work up a draft encompassing both of
them. Well, let's do it.
Well, that would be, if you damage it, wouldn't it? Malicious mischief.
In other words, a criminal mischief, as you suggested earlier, with a section on tampering.
Well, where it fits makes no difference, and I thought was that it may more logically fit together to have a malicious destruction tampering section or chapter. Let's, for purposes of draft number two, prepare this section, and I think you can get that language, can't you? As has been proposed, then when we get to the malicious destruction section or the mischief section, let's look at that individually and then talk about putting the two of them together. Okay? Okay. And I'm sure glad you're going to be able to get that language, because I lost it. But just so that I have in my mind, you tell me again.
A person commits criminal tampering if he tampers or interferes with property of another with intent to cause substantial inconvenience to the owner or to another person and without having any right to do so, or any reasonable ground to believe that he has such right.
Period.
Period.
Good. That's good. Now let's go to the next section.
And then that leaves out subsection 2 altogether.
Mm-hmm.
Utilities.
Or we could add, even if it's a utility.
Well, in this stage, I'd almost settle for that.
I think all you feel like that. He's a lawyer.
Okay, page 11.
Now, I don't anticipate that this is going to be a particularly a popular section in this application of property. But it seems to me that there were good reasons for having a provision such as this. But Ms. misapplication of property. A person commits misapplication of property when knowingly possessing personal property of another pursuant to an agreement that the same will be returned to the owner at a future time. He loans, leases, pledges, pawns, or otherwise encumbers such property without the consent of the owner in such manners to create a risk either that the owner will not be able to recover the property or that the owner will suffer pecuniary loss. Two, in a prosecution under this section is a defense that at the time the prosecution was commenced, the defendant had recovered possession of the property unencumbered as a result of the unlawful disposition. And B, the owner had suffered no material pecuniary loss as a result of the unlawful disposition. The specific acts of loaning, leasing, and recovering do not necessarily include an attempt to deprive or appropriate. Therefore, they would not ordinarily reach the standard of theft under our theft draft. And then subsection 2 provides that the owner hasn't been hurt, in fact.
Well, the first section is saying that he's guilty, if there's a risk that the owner will do this, then you go on to say that it's a complete defense if it was only a risk and it didn't come true. He does it in such a manner as to create a risk, either that he won't get it back or that he'll suffer a loss. And then it's a defense if the perpetrator got it back unencumbered, or if the owner didn't lose anything.
That's what that says in A and B, number 2.
Well, that's what I intended to say. In other words, that he could have done these things with this and created such a risk, but that if the property has come back to the defendant, he's recovered it, and it's no longer encumbered. In other words, if he did loan it out or if he pawned it and got it back, prosecution would lie in those.
Ultimately saying that if he misapplies it and doesn't get it back, and the guy has suffered a loss, then he's guilty.
Yes. Now this is from the New York code again. The text is set out there.
Well, I wonder, I'm kind of real liberal, but I wonder, I acquire a piece of property, and I loan it to, I borrow a car from Don, and I loan it to Ed without Don's consent. There's a full expectation that Ed's going to return it to me tomorrow. And Ed doesn't. He has a wreck. He doesn't have any insurance, and I'm judgment proof. So I'm guilty of misapplication of property and subject to a criminal sanction, right?
Well, I think you could debate that because of the context in which the word loan appears here. Loan, lease, pledge, pawn, or otherwise encumber. Is your physical loaning of it to Representative Elder come in the category of loan, lease, pledge, or encumber? You loan it to him, it's true, but the loan takes part of its meaning out of the context of the rest of the that language, that it might not mean simply the physical act of loaning. If you loaned it to him in exchange for a financial
obligation,
so that he would have some claim on the car in the future and say, well, sure, you can have the car back anytime I get my money back, you would, I think, have loaned it in the sense of encumbering it, but I'm not sure that your description fits it. I'm not positive it doesn't either.
You take it that an encumbrance must always apply here. Is that what you mean?
Or otherwise, and because of the use of the word otherwise.
Yeah, and all those words together, do use
that
to have a financial transaction.
Well, arguendo, word I picked up in moot court. Assume that it did. Assume that you're wrong and I'm right. The act of loaning it to him and having it suddenly become incapable of being returned is misapplication here, but isn't it also, under our general definition in preliminary draft 4, disposition of property in such manner under such circumstances as to render it unlikely that the owner will recover such property? That's what I'm talking about. Are we running? You're saying that this is designed to cover something that we haven't covered already, and I'm saying, by golly, maybe it is already covered. And actually, I'm just trying to pick an argument so you can convince me that you're right.
Are you saying that it should cover loaning it even if there is no financial element involved because you were entrusted to keep it yourself?
No, I don't think that shouldn't be subject to criminal sanction. If I loan money on it.
Well, are you saying that the otherwise encumbers qualifies loans, leases, pledges, or bonds?
No. I'm not saying that, and at least
So then you're saying that this covers a situation where I loan it to Ed.
Yes.
Not any encumbrance.
Now, in that instance, doesn't it run head on with 2A of Section 1, where you're talking about deprive another property means to dispose of the property in such a manner under such circumstances as to render it unlikely that the owner will recover such property?
Well, if you can. Mm-hmm. Assume that
I disposed of it by loaning it to him and he wrecked it, and that renders it unlikely that you're going to get it back.
The only test is if it creates a risk. I assume any time you loan property, you loan me this cup and I'm likely to drop it and break it. There is a risk that you won't get it back. And I've committed a crime, or you have, whoever's. I'm wondering in business transactions where certain types of property are received, or possession of it is taken by the retailer, let's say, on a consignment. And then the retailer, in turn, borrows from a bank on some kind of a floor arrangement. I don't know the complications of how this is handled, but is he, by any chance, borrowing money on somebody else's property?
Yeah, if he represents that he owns the stuff that's in there when actually.
Well, no, assuming it's a completely honest transaction.
Oh, and he tells the lender that I don't own this, this is just here on consignment.
On consignment, but the lender will loan him money on it. There is a risk that he won't get the property back, the owner. And my point is that whether it's a financial transaction or just I loan you the car that is owned by my neighbor that he's about to use for a week. Anytime you part with possession of it, there is a risk that you won't get it back.
That's right. In the instance where you loan me your neighbor's car and I wreck it, and he doesn't get it back.
Well, the minute I loan it to you, there's a risk.
Sure there is. But the resolution of the problem that's created there by the failure to return is of a civil nature.
I assume this is intended to make the kind of embezzlement a second degree, or a third degree.
But you're the one that commits the crime.
Right. I'd be
through inadvertence on my part.
Right.
There's no mens rea as far as you're concerned. This is...
Well, he committed the crime because he had something that was entrusted to him, and he didn't keep the trust because it was entrusted to him, at least implicitly, that he wouldn't retransfer.
And so you're saying that he had, so you can...
He
you
committed
can
the
imply
crime.
Imply criminal intent to him?
Well, when the neighbor loaned him the neighbor's car, there was implied in that I'm loaning it to you and nobody else. I don't want you to turn it over to the Aaron Scarum kid that lives on the other side of it. And the minute that he then turns it over to the Aaron Scarum kid, he's done a wrongful act.
Yeah.
He has not lived up to his trust.
See, a reasonable person wouldn't have loaned his car to me. You wouldn't have loaned his car to me.
And he wouldn't have loaned
without
it to me if he knew I was going to loan
it
to you.
Right. It says here, without consent of the owner. If you were a reasonable individual, you would say, is it all right to loan Ed your car? And he'd say yes if he thought it was all right. That's the whole thing. And there must be some rackets that exist in New York in connection with this that we don't know about here. Maybe our Portland District Attorney, present Portland District Attorney, can tell us all about this.
No material pecuniary loss. Well,
well, as I said earlier, I didn't think this was going to be a very popular section.
I'd like to talk to the chief of the fraud detail in Portland Police Department, but he'd say, gee, well, that looks great to me because of something that he knows about. But sitting here like this, I don't know.
Well, give us another for instance, Bob.
Or
a for
instance. Well, getting back to your car situation, it seems to me that you could have a car that you either borrowed from somebody yourself or you leased it. Rented it, and then you loan it out to your friend. And going back to our definitions of under theft, to appropriate, you'd have to exercise control over property, or aid a third person to exercise control over property or of another permanently, or for so extended a period, or under such circumstances as to acquire the major portion of the economic value or benefit of such property. I think that wouldn't necessarily apply to this kind of thing.
I agree.
Deprive another means to withhold property of another or to cause property of another to be withheld from him permanently for so extended a period under such circumstances that the major portion of its economic value or benefit is lost to him.
Okay.
I don't think that necessarily applies.
I agree.
Dispose of the property in such a manner under such circumstances as to render it unlikely that an owner will recover such property.
That's the hang up.
Well, do you think loaning it to another necessarily means that it's unlikely that the owner of the property is going to get it back or he's going to recover it?
Well,
there might be other risks besides whether he'll get it back or not. He might be. If I loan you my hunting rifle, I have an interest in who you might let have use that if I don't. I mean, I couldn't loan it to you for the use of your 3-year-old child. If I did, I would be putting myself in a place where I might get sued for damages. And it would be wrongful for you to turn around and loan it to your neighbor's kid or something.
Well, I agree with what he's saying, and I think that what we're talking about under misapplication of property, we're talking about using this property in such a way that you create a risk, not that these things that we set out are theft definitions, not that necessarily any of these took place, but that you have disposed of this property, loaned it, or leased it, or pledged it, or did something else with it, which creates a risk, see, that the owner is going to suffer a loss or he might not recover.
If I...
I think as long as we're...
But you might... I don't think that that's stealing it.
If I do something that creates a risk, there's nothing wrong so long as you get it back intact, or so long as you lose nothing material pecuniary as a result of my misapplication.
I don't agree with that last. It seems to me that if number one is good law, I'm not saying that it isn't, it doesn't make sense to put those things in there as defenses. You've done everything when you turn it over to somebody else without authority. And it's just by the grace of God that you get it back without having it hurt. But you've done, the actor has done his part of the wrong when he does that.
You're saying that if I, or if he, if I turned over dead without consent,
and you've committed the crime.
And I've committed the crime.
But whether I wreck the car or not, get it back the next day or not?
Either.
Yeah, that might affect the penalty for it, but not the...
I had a case just like this that I had a few weeks ago where this girl loaned her car to another college student to drive to Eugene to change his residence. And she had a non-owner's policy. So she told this fellow that she loaned the car to, or permissive use policy, and she told the fellow that she loaned the car to, don't let anybody else drive it. So he did, and the other driver wrecked the car. There's no insurance coverage. They're out $500. Should the fellow that she loaned the car to be charged with a crime?
Well, either way,
it's not necessary to charge her with the crime.
For just loaning the car to
charge him.
Either way, in that particular instance, she'd be subject to crime, either in the draft or in your suggested amendment. Either way.
Should this fellow be charged with a crime in that case? Of course, there wasn't any encumbrance on there, was there?
Well, that was a question Kathleen raised, and Don says that the encumbrance wasn't designed to modify the loan.
Well, we could resolve that question by striking the word otherwise out of it.
There's no question in that case that by this fellow's wrongdoing, the owner of the car is out $500.
Well, here, let me talk to the jury for a minute from a prosecution's point of view. Why do we take a